Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
And I'm Dr. Tim Pinnell.
And we are very excited to have with us today Sam Parfit, someone I've known for a long time. We've wanted to interview for a long time. So glad that he can join us today. Sam is the founder and CEO of the True Athlete Project, a US and UK-based nonprofit organization which aims to build a more compassionate world through sport. Their team design and deliver a range of mindfulness and creative practices for athletes of all levels, from primary school children to Olympians and Paralympians. Originally from Norfolk, England, Sam moved to Tennessee to play Division I college tennis. Since then, he has explored the power of sport through his role as a coach, mentor, athletics director, researcher, and university tutor. He has delivered mindfulness to Olympians and Paralympians in more than 25 different sports, to sub-Saharan African young leaders through the MasterCard Scholars Program, and to primary school children in Scotland. So you can hear from that bio why we were so eager to talk to him. He has such an interesting background as an athlete and as a mentor and as a teacher and into mindfulness. Thank you so much, Sam, for joining us today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. And Sam, you were kind enough as well to offer to begin our episode with just a brief practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So just inviting everyone to transition into being mindful. So sometimes we think about this snapping into our sort of mindful posture, but just allowing ourselves to transition. So maybe taking in the sights around us, maybe the colors or the shapes that we can see as we gently look around the room. Just noticing what it feels like to quieten a little. Perhaps we notice some sounds. Just giving ourselves permission to slow down, to settle. Perhaps even noticing how the breath is. And then just inviting you to settle into a posture that feels supportive. So that might just be a little bit of moving in the chair that feels good for you. And inviting you to gently close the eyes or soften the gaze. And again, just giving ourselves permission to sit quietly. Sometimes there can be some resistance to that. And that's not a mistake. That's very normal. We've been busy doing tasks, working through the to-do list, planning ahead. Just noticing the full sensory experience of allowing ourselves to settle here, be still. And I'm just going to drop in a quote that can almost act as our anchor for this settling practice. And it's something that my first teacher, used to say. Said, "The amount of intensity needed to be mindful is the same amount of intensity needed to just notice where your left foot is. Just know where your left foot is." So now, if you can just spend a moment knowing where your left foot is, it's not very much effort or intensity needed to do that at all. There's a sort of innate knowing. And so it's this soft, flexible, gentle attention that we can actually tap into anytime we remember. But often, when we concentrate through daily life, and even in our practices, when we're trying to bring our attention to anchors, we can start to grimace and focus quite hard, and sometimes our posture changes. So, just allowing ourselves this quote around the intensity needed, the effort needed to just know where our left foot is as we become aware of our posture, perhaps how we're grounded through the chair or our feet on the ground. Noticing the temperature on our skin, maybe in our hands or our face. Nothing more than just knowing gently how that feels. Now the sense of you in the room, the space around you. What's that like? As we open our eyes and come back, just knowing that we can tune back into that gentle awareness anytime we like.
Thanks, Sam. That was great.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I really love that quote too about the left foot. I feel like that's, it really boils it down to its simplicity, you know, and really getting at all you need to do to be mindful is just be aware of this one thing. And obviously paying attention, paying mindful attention is endlessly challenging in so many ways. But how you can just simplify it and make it about that one thing, how powerfully easy it is at the same time as being so complex and difficult. I really love that idea.
Yeah. Well, and I really enjoyed in that meditation how it was like emphasizing both. It's like so easy. Just notice where your left foot is. And yet it's actually quite difficult to give yourself permission to just sit and be, you know, there needs to be some measure of transition. I've been thinking actually about this recently, but in this, in like the physical analogy, I guess, of like a warm-up, like, you know, might we want to start all of our meditations with a kind of a warm-up in the same way you do with a workout to get our minds, our consciousness ready to like do this, maybe, you know, minimal effort, but the effort of noticing where our left foot is, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it can feel like quite a big shift to go from normal life to, oh, I've got to do my mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. And if we want all of this amazing stuff that you guys do and mindfulness to be impactful, then kind of really thinking into how to help people bridge that, you know, make that step from living into practicing and training and developing that practice and just being okay with starting to slow down and be still. I think it's a really important part of it.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously, as I mentioned in your bio, you do a lot of work with younger populations through your True Athlete Project. I would imagine something like that really resonates with kids.
Yeah, I think it does. And they can feel it very quickly. They feel that change. It's like, oh, hang on, there's something different here. I think that's one of the big takeaways really from the work that we've been doing, is that coaches are often quite worried about how athletes of all ages will take it. Like, oh, you need to make sure you kind of couch it in performance, or you got to really make that link clear. And there is some of that for sure, and around using, you know, language that's relatable and things. But the big takeaway for me is that I've never really experienced much resistance from athletes, because they feel it so quickly when they have the experience of slowing down and being in a, maybe a group setting. You know, they're with this person. Normally a teacher is kind of telling them stuff to do, and they've got some mandatory homework at the end. And it's like, oh, hang on, suddenly this space feels really different. This is about exploring and about someone who doesn't have an agenda apart from just being there for me. And I think, yeah, that's maybe the having that experience is early on, I think is huge.
Yeah. I mean, I work mostly with college athletes, but my imagining, right, is that working with even younger athletes, yeah, they would be even more kind of receptive to this. Cause I feel like what you're describing feels so true, in that, like, I feel like when I go in and work with a team, like I am offering this, just this very different kind of relationship, this very different kind of experience where it's not about an outcome. It's not about an agenda. But they have such a hard time trusting that because they've spent all this time being like, well, wait a second. No, there is a right way to do this. And there is a specific thing that we're working for. Right. And it's like, you know, if you were to subtract like several years of that training, you know, and work with someone who's in middle school or even younger, right, might they be a little bit more trusting or open to this very different perspective?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, knowing that you understand what they're, or at least some of what they're experiencing and the challenges that they may be having and the different pressures that are involved, I think is helpful in that process. But I think it's probably in such stark contrast to, you know, swiping through social media and scrolling and having all of this stimulation kind of all the time, you know, just so actually within sort of three breaths, there's a sort of, oh, wow. So that's helpful. That's helpful that the practice does that.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, the coaches kind of pull you aside and tell you, okay, you gotta make this connection clear. So when you notice, you know, this reaction the kids are having, how long does it take for the coaches to catch on before they realize, oh, this is different?
Yeah, it's, well, so it varies, I guess, obviously. So for example, I went to a training camp and the first, so it was with a new governing body we were working with, a sporting federation. And I went into the first session and I was sort of just there to be a bit of a wallflower and observe in that first day, first weekend. And there was a very, very sort of Victorian, sort of macho, sporty sort of initial talk that was setting up the camp that I was seeing kind of being directed right sort of down these kids' throats. And I was like, huh, okay, cool. This is great that I'm and the Giraffe Project are here, because that's something we can work with and explore. And it was only by the end of that weekend, so not very long at all, that same coach was then taking part in the body scan at the end of the day with the lights out, with everyone lying down in the hall, and then did this, just spoke so beautifully about kind of being so grateful for how that camp weekend had been. And it was just a really, that was an example of a quick shift. It's like, okay, interesting. Sometimes it takes longer. So there was a coach recently who had some resistance for sure around what we talk about in the Triathlete Project, which is not just mindfulness. It's a sort of range of mindfulness-based, compassion-based practices, creative practices, writing practices. And that involved then kind of having some individual chats with this guy. Mm-hmm. And that was really helpful to just kind of find where the common ground was. So in terms of language, in terms of purpose, and normally, of course, we always have more in common than maybe we think on the surface with people when you start talking. But what was interesting was then we kind of started quite early co-designing the sessions and making sure that the work was, so we touched on topics like suffering and discipline and these topics that are really, there's a lot of great sort of material in there around, you know, when we're practicing mindfulness around those topics, but just kind of drawing those out a little bit earlier. And it seemed to really resonate with the sort of the particular kids that coach didn't think mindfulness would impact. It was them, that group, who were actually kind of texting saying, oh my God, that was like really impactful. I just got my personal best when I went for a run using that technique. And And so that was a kind of slower process that involved a bit more. I think relationships are so, so crucial to this work. And I think you touch on it in your book, which is amazing. But you touch on the importance of that relationship between the person that the athletes actually already feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And actually them being the ones who can be trained to deliver this work is really powerful. Mm. So I think that relationship bit is pretty crucial.
Yeah, right. It's so essential for not just the, I think the buy-in, though I think that is really important. Certainly we've had the experience, you know, if a coach is not on board or worse, kind of like sending signals that they actually like don't agree with the training, but kind of have allowed you to do it anyway, right? It just, it's so toxic for the athletes then to want to get on board. But of course, it's also like, it's unsustainable, even if it does resonate with the athletes. You know, you need the coaches, the other stakeholders to be speaking the language. And so, yeah, finding ways that it resonates with those people. I mean, it really reminds me, I was in preparation for working with this men's lacrosse team. I spent over the summer, spent some time just working one-on-one with the coach, helping him to kind of develop his own mindfulness practice, you know? And like, yeah, I remember one of the kind of light bulb moments for him was like when he was like driving to work one day and saw someone else like experiencing road rage. And he was like, oh my God, that used to be me. Like that, that looks terrible, you know? And like that really, I think, influenced how the training with the team went, because he had this like personal profound connection to it, which I think it would have gone totally differently if he wasn't, you know, personally connected in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the training for coaches is vital, because it's a courageous enough act for us as people who are comfortable in describing the benefits of mindfulness and leading mindfulness practice, but actually for someone who is kind of taking that step into that world and there's already a kind of dynamic with the groups that they're working with, to actually then start delivering this new thing and trying it out is a very, very brave act. I mean, you can't kind of underestimate the support and the training, I think, that someone trying to do that needs and deserves.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a great segue to talk more broadly about the True Athlete Project and this amazing work that you've been doing for, gosh, we've known each other now, it feels like more years than maybe I realize. When did you start the project? And tell us more about kind of what's behind it and what your initiatives are right now.
Yeah. So I think I approached you before we were even a nonprofit, or, you know, an actual entity, and was looking at your research, you guys. And that's when I reached out to Keith. And so, yeah, that was about five years ago or so. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I was a tennis player, originally moved to the States at 18 to play Division I college tennis on a scholarship. And had all sorts of surgeries, so really 4 years of that playing career that was just a complete roller coaster, kind of physically but mentally, emotionally too. And so really left sport with this very strong kind of sense of the paradox of sport, this kind of joyful, liberating escape on the one hand, and then on the other hand, where it is actually much more harmful, the sort of darker side. And I was seeing that not only for myself but in with peers, my sister's experience of PE, with you know, in the media, with very elite athletes, but even at a grassroots sport level. So I did a lot of work with at-risk Hispanic immigrant kids with sport and disability sport, inclusive sport, and it was even kind of very prevalent there, when it should be all about that kind of much more positive side. Even those experiences were sort of being taken from people with this very sort of traditional approach to coaching, sort of screaming these outcomes like, you know, be confident, focus, relax, without ever really like skillfully training those attributes, which can be skillfully trained. So and then very fortunately got a position as a head of sport at a school that really didn't have a PE program, so could design something from scratch that really tried to shift perceptions of what it means to be an athlete at quite a young age, something far removed from the win-loss column, and yeah, much more about kind of personal growth and how we relate to the world and others around us. And at the same time, I was being introduced to mindfulness and was seeing a sports psychologist, and so all the themes sort of converged really, and we set up this program that had parkour and sports poetry and mindfulness and studying heroes like Muhammad Ali. And that curriculum got picked up when I was invited to present at the Muhammad Ali Center, which was a forum all about nurturing humanitarian athletes. And yet at that conference, it was so inspiring. It's an amazing place in Kentucky. But at the forum, I sort of was seeing this big gulf between sport for social change efforts and performance sport. And as a sort of recently retired athlete, it was sort of grating, really, because the only thing sort of linking those two worlds of sport for change and performance sport was sort of some corporate social responsibility where, you know, a famous footballer goes and puts their arm around some kids and there's a great photo and it's wonderful. But what's it really changing at a sort of deeper societal level? So the idea was, can we bring together people from lots of different disciplines? So the guy who pioneered wheelchair Tai Chi and the first woman to defeat men in canoeing history, and sport and clinical psychologists, Olympians, Paralympians, former UK health minister, to design programs that could not only improve performance, but also nurture mental well-being and cultivate a more compassionate culture of sport and a more compassionate society. How do you do that all in one so that part and parcel of being an athlete is this more sort of outward looking compassion piece? And so mindfulness, with its ability to impact performance, mental health, and cultivating compassionate societies and cultures, has been our sort of golden thread that runs through all of our programs and our vehicles for that mission. So we run mentoring programs that Paralympians and Paralympians with young people, young athletes, coach development workshops. We work with community sports centers. We help governing bodies to embed this mindfulness-based approach within the sort of daily running of what they do. So whether it's leadership or volunteers or athletes, coaches. That's kind of our journey. We're a nonprofit. We're a 501c3 in the US, and we're setting up as a charity here in the UK as well.
Wow. Yeah, just amazing. I mean, so inspiring. I think very much, certainly kind of aligned with how I kind of think about kind of the role of mindfulness. I mean, I even when I'm working with athletes, I feel like I'm like my primary objective is like helping them become more mindful. It just so happens we're doing it in the context of sport. Like, I don't even really view myself as like a sport performance, mental performance consultant. Because I think some of these other things about like being a more compassionate human being and having deeper relationships with people and like feels to me like so much bigger. And I think we know from the research, right, that more balanced athletes, happier athletes are better athletes. They're more successful athletes, right? So it's like focusing on these bigger things still serves the function of improving performance, but helps in all of these other really profound ways.
Yeah. And showing people that logic, there's quite clear logic around the ability to focus and be present. And so we talk a lot, there are some things that really resonate. So the 20 second weapon is a phrase that really resonates. So with tennis players, you have 20 seconds. So I often talk just from the world that I know something about. So in tennis, you have 20 seconds between points to be able to reset and wipe away what's gone before. And whether that's a bad line call, or it's, you know, your opponent shoulder barging you at the change of ends, or whatever it is, to reset and to be completely focused on what we do next, no matter what the score is. And so if you can make those, if you can be really good at that in those 20 seconds, that can become a weapon, just like a big serve or having great footwork or a huge forehand. So that becomes your weapon if you can do that a little bit better than your opponent. So that's something that has really resonated. And obviously that then shifts when you're working with athletes in different sports, because maybe you're a basketball player and you don't have 20 seconds between plays. So, okay, maybe it's something that you do when you're running back on defense. That's your moment. Or a timeout is maybe a more obvious one. We do a lot of work with fencing, and actually they have three different weapons that have different rhythms to their the sort of flow of the play. So yeah, really interesting to sort of try to help people integrate that. Another one is the second arrow. The idea of the second arrow has been, and actually the more I sort of reflect on that, the more I realize it encompasses so much of mindfulness practice. So the first arrow being the event, and we often think that the consequence happens because of whatever that event was. And actually the consequence happens because of our response to the event, right, usually, or at least an interaction between those two things. And so that second arrow, kind of understanding when we're in that mode of firing that second arrow and just giving ourselves the space to decide, okay, actually I have a choice about what to do next. That has really resonated because there are so many moments that's applicable for.
Yeah. And I've certainly found that, you know, in teaching this, it really is about sometimes describing the same concept in 1,000 different ways, you know, until you find the way that like lands for a person. And I mean, I think there's that kind of diversity and receptivity just in a single homogenous team. But then I think about kind of the range of experiences you've had working with Hispanic immigrants, working with athletes in the States, working with athletes in the UK, sub-Saharan leaders, like some very real significant cultural differences, language differences, right? Difference between Olympic athletes versus Paralympic athletes. And I'm curious to hear like what kinds of things you've had to think about or do to adapt when working with these different populations. How do you find the thing that resonates with them, with such different people?
Yeah, really good question. One thing that I noticed between the US and the UK is, and it probably speaks to sort of broader cultural stuff, is that there's, it probably speaks to America generally in terms of the extremes that you see. Mm-hmm. So although there's the stuff that I was mentioning earlier around sort of quite toxic youth sport culture at times, for example, there's also a much more openness in terms of talking about things that are a bit more emotional. We don't use the word spiritual very much within the Triathlete Project, sort of careful around the word, but spiritual actually. Yeah. Whereas here in the UK, it feels like there's a sort of narrower range where you're allowed to sort of move between. And whether that's because, I don't know, maybe religion is less of a regularly talked about thing here in the UK. That's maybe my theory at the moment. But certainly it feels like if you say the word emotion here or someone is emotional, that's sort of got a loaded connotation quite negatively here. And maybe it does there, but I feel like possibly less so just based on my experience. So I think here that in the UK, you probably have to zone in maybe a little bit more on some of the science and the evidence, possibly. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very sort of accessible practice for anyone. I probably don't know the research well enough actually around kind of cross-cultural differences in terms of how people take to and benefit from mindfulness. I don't know if you guys have takes on that. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think it's a very robust literature at this
point.
I think we're still very much at the tip of understanding that. And yeah, I think, Tim, that was a great question, but I can understand why it's really hard to answer.
Well, yeah, part of the reason it was on my mind was because I think there's just not a ton out there because it is. I mean, you think about, you know, that there's these kind of the Eastern origins of these practices, and you can see aspects of mindfulness in pretty much every major world religion, right? Like, obviously, there's power to these practices and these ideas that will resonate with people wherever they are, whoever they are. But of course, cultural differences really do matter, right? And how the idea is framed or how someone's going to take it in is going to be different. But yeah, we just don't know. Like, we're out there to like trying to figure it out, but I wish there was more literature on it.
Yeah. I suppose in reflecting, I guess so the work with the MasterCard Scholars students, these sub-Saharan African leaders who come over to Scotland and do this amazing course at the University of Edinburgh. And it's very kind of a lot of holistic personal development and then a real push kind of to send that out into the world. And with that group, the values piece was very important. And they were very, very conscious of the sort of bigger purpose of why practicing like this can be important for your role as a change maker in the world. And I think so identity and values is one of our sort of five core themes within the Triathlete mm-hmm. Project, along with mindfulness and performance and community responsibility and nature and connectedness. And so that values piece I find quite helpful in terms of the setup in working with a new group, like kind of what's the bigger purpose of this practice, why are we here. So I suppose that's something. But I'd have to reflect more on the difference in delivery across the different groups I've worked with. Yeah, it feels quite natural as you sort of shift into working with new groups. There's a sort of a rhythm and a dynamic, and sort of try your best to respond in the moment to what's coming up, I guess.
Yeah. Well, right, the advantage of having our own mindfulness practice as the mindfulness instructor, right, to be able to be aware of all that stuff unfolding in a moment and know how to tweak or change or kind of respond to the feedback.
Yeah, and that can take some real learning, and again, it's quite a courageous act, really. It's to actually really practice embodying mindfulness when you're teaching. And
yeah,
it was a really had quite a profound example of that when, so I was teaching a group of young athletes, and we had a weekend camp, and we were doing various different practices, and there was this one particular kid who was sort of talking quite a lot, trying to bring in, sort of trying to nudge the person next to them. And it's like, and I was actually through the course of the weekend not really responding really mindfully. I was in the session, but it was kind of aggravating me a little. I was sort of asking another coach, like, what's happening there? And it was starting to get to me a little bit. It's like, this is an issue. And then I was sitting down in the clubhouse, and I saw the kid walk over, and he had a water bottle on the table. And I thought, oh, I'll just kind of ask how you are and you know, try to generate a little bit of a personal relationship, because that's so important for this work. And so I just literally opened with, hey, how are you doing? And picked up the water bottle and just stopped for a second and just opened up, said, like, your sessions are the reason I come to camps. Like, doing mindfulness over the last few months has just kind of changed my life. I have so much anxiety around, like, even getting here. And I was just like, wow, like, my mind was blown. The you know, in terms of not judging a book by its cover and jumping to conclusions and becoming quite self-conscious about, like, my teaching and the sessions. And it was just a really powerful example.
Well, I know you were saying, and I agree with you, that it's courageous, you know, for coaches to go this route. But I think the work you're doing, I mean, you can hear the depth to it, right? And how far away we are from what is a pretty common model in sports psychology of just popping in and doing some repair work or some surface mental training and then moving on to something else. And, you know, it's something that just, I mean, again, I've talked to you a number of times, and every time I'm have this opportunity, I'm reminded of, like, just how much depth there is and how powerful it is, the work that you're doing. And I mean, it's right there in kind of the mission statement of the True Athlete Project, but paradigm shift, right? What you're trying to change the culture. That's pretty courageous, you know? And so I think you can hear in an anecdote like that, like what you just shared, the impact, right? Like, you're talking about how you're helping these other people to face their stuff. But how that was a moment for you, and how you could be so open as a teacher, and you could be so present with your own reactions and then open to this change, right? And it, that in itself is so hard to not fall into something like the confirmation bias, right? Like just to be like, wow, this was so different than I expected. Like, how much mindfulness was present in that moment for you? It's so cool to hear.
thank you very much. Yeah, well, and it's also hugely sustaining work as well, you know, with examples like that, or because this, you know, a lot of our projects really are about that sort of paradigm shift and that culture change. And so we hear these stories. You know, I was on the phone to a coach yesterday who said, oh, by the way, kind of at the end of a conversation, oh, by the way, we this group, named four kids who come to my sessions, they've been leading their own mindfulness practice at the club. I was like, that's a pretty cool outcome that you're just kind of sliding in there at the end. It's like, maybe we can capture some of that. But so it's very, you know, you hear that sort of feedback. And as you guys know, sort of in classes, when you're delivering and facilitating, and the things that people bring up are so profound and rich and real. And it's courageous, but it's also sustaining. And I think people who do what we do are probably hugely grateful that we do it.
Right. I guess circling back to kind of the point you were making before about how risky it can sometimes feel to talk about emotion, you know, in the context of sport. And yeah, that's like really what we're asking people to do, right? And not to like come in and have a therapy group, but to acknowledge like the fear, the anxiety, the worry, right? That is going to exist, of course, outside of their sport too, but obviously it's going to impact their sport performance. But that's so much vulnerability.
It is. And then you sort of get bits of resistance and you try to sort of work out how we can maneuver and yet be really real. So like there was a coach who recently said, I was sort of talking about mindfulness and they said, my wife's really into crystals. that's not actually what I'm talking about here. but obviously it didn't come from a bad place. So, okay, how do you respond? Well, and that bit of just opening up. So showing that you value and showing that sports and coaches and leaders in organizations value this work by just building in some, even if it's just a very basic routine that you're building in maybe at the beginning of the session, where it's just saying that we feel that this is important, you know. And it can be like we sometimes do a very sort of embodied practice around embracing failure, where they create their own kind of personal handshake and patty cake. And sometimes that spirals off into a full on dance. And then they share failures with each other. So it might be something very, very simple. Like I was trying to run for the bus and I slipped on the ice and I saw the bus kind of gradually slowly leave with everyone sort of looking at me as I was fumbling my bag and trying to stand up. Or it could be something much more profound, like I wanted to be a professional tennis player and it didn't happen, and then they celebrate it with this kind of fun personalized sort of dance patty cake handshake thing, and so that's not maybe sort of a pure mindfulness exercise, but it just allows the space to open a little. And you know, we see lots of athletes coming for mental health support conversations. And it's really because that environment, I think, is being created where that's okay to do it. So it's important work, and it's important, I think, that the whole sort of mindfulness in sport community can help each other in articulating the social benefits, the public benefits, the knock-on effect of this type of approach to sport.
Well, that's something that's been one of my favorite parts of being a part of this community, is just how collaborative the mindfulness and space. It's a small community still, but how collaborative it all is. And it's a global collaboration, right? I mean, you're talking about yourself, you're spanning two continents, and clearly your organization is bringing in these multidisciplinary experts from around the world. It's really such a unique and amazing world for how small and how new this effort is, to see the reach and the it's this idea again, to me at least, of paradigm shift, how it's such a different way of collaborating than maybe any other business or industry, right? Where let's try to find the synergy instead of being in competition with each other.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And your work plays a huge role in that. So thank you for the book, for your work. It's a game changer.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. I know, you know, as I said at the beginning, like it feels like we've known each other for a long time. I can't believe it's been 5 years since you started the project. That's amazing. And you've clearly done so much with it. So where do you see things going? It seems like, you know, I'm following you from afar and hearing about these different initiatives, and like what are the things you guys are working on now?
Yeah, thanks. So we've got some interesting projects being explored with a Premiership Football Club and their community foundation. I think that there are some really important areas to try to reach. So obviously there are sort of trade-offs as a startup nonprofit in terms of where you go to deliver your services, and just I think us being really conscious of where the need is greatest. So that project is trying to target sort of year sevens in high school and state high school football teams, soccer teams. So the real sort of cultural architects of the school can really have a an important impact on the rest of the school community. Mm-hmm. So that's an exciting project. Working with more governing bodies, we work with a few. We want to keep growing that, because that's just been, we've just seen fantastic impact really with that project. So that's exciting. Growing our mentoring program. So at the moment we have 68 athletes across 33 different sports and 10 different countries, lots of Olympians and Paralympians. So trying to grow that. And I think, you know, I put quite a lot of pressure on myself, I guess, in terms of growing the charity. But I guess the bit that is nice when you're doing what we do is that just there's a profound impact, hopefully, with every little bit that you do. So it's not like if you don't reach a certain stage of growth and scale that you've not done something, hopefully, that has made a difference to people. So try and bear that in mind as the stress levels kind of build and I think about big strategic plans to try to grow our impact. But yeah,
that resonates with us a little in the MSP Institute. We can understand that.
I thought it would.
Oh yes. And also just like how important it is for us, right, to be mindful. I mean, you're talking about like, I need to be in the process instead of focused on the outcome, right? And recognize that there's tremendous value in the process, regardless of whether or not I reach the outcome. And that, like, that I think is like pretty profound when we can make that mental shift.
Yeah. That's that courageousness I was referring to before, just in being leaders of these programs or running a business, right? Or a nonprofit. It's a very courageous way to operate, for sure.
Yeah, trusting in the process and the, you know, the belief that people come from a good place, and so if you can be on a journey with them, that good things will happen.
Yeah, patience, right, as it all unfolds. Because everyone kind of goes at different paces, you know. That's something that your story before made me think about an athlete who I had worked with on a team. And it was like 3 years after I worked with this athlete on her team, I saw her again in a different context. She had since left the team and she was like, oh, I finally got all that mindfulness stuff you were talking about. And it has like changed my life. And I was like, that's amazing. Like, I'm so glad, right? I wish it had happened when we were working together on the team, but it's like, sometimes this, everyone's on their own journey, right? And we can be with them for a part of it, but we can't control what it's like for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's kind of fun to think about. You know, you don't know what impact is being made and where that goes, and the sort of ripple effect of the work, hopefully. And I think embodying, so with the Triathlete Project we have three sort of big areas of our strategy, and the first is embodying. So it's embodying, delivering, and influencing. But embodying, and the sort of combination of embodying and delivering, is part of the influencing. But that really making a sort of trying to make a strong statement that that is absolutely the first and most important thing. Not always easy, of course.
No.
Well, this is awesome. Thank you so much, Sam, for joining us today and sharing a bit about your work and your philosophy. I mean, it is awesome. I love hearing about this stuff. If you're comfortable, if you want to invite people to connect with you or with the project, if you know, I know you guys have a website, you have a social media presence. Do you want to share any of that?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the offer. So our website is www.thetrueathleteproject.org, thetrueathleteproject.org. Our Twitter is @trueathleteproj, and my email address is sam@thetrueathleteproject.org. sam@thetrueathleteproject.org. It'd be lovely if anyone wanted to get in touch.
That's great. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
And we just want to take a moment, of course, and thank our support as well, and thank Carol Glass for everything that she does for the podcast behind the scenes, and thank you to our producer, Taylor Brown of EnduroMind. If you'd like to connect with us, the MSP Institute, we also have a website, www.mindfulsportperformance.org. We also have some companion media sites for our podcast. We have our YouTube channel where we do post our meditations that are featured at the beginning of our episodes. So Sam, hopefully we'll be able to post what you led earlier today very shortly. We also have an Instagram page for the podcast, and the handle there is @mindful_sport_podcast. You can also connect with our MSBE Facebook page. And I, Dr. Keith Kaufman, I'm on Twitter. My handle is @mindfulsportdoc. So lots and lots of ways to connect with us as well. So thank you to everyone who listened, and we will see you next time.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.